This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. While mainstream media attention to the Dakota Access Pipeline protests has already waned, activists are refusing to back down. Since April of this year, Indigenous leaders and tribal members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe set up camp in Cannonball, North Dakota, near one portion of the controversial pipeline projects. The protests grew enormously in September when activists of diverse backgrounds joined in to express solidarity. Under the hashtag NoDAPL, spirited demonstrations captured national attention. Bizarrely, the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest federation of labor unions, recently issued an official position supporting the pipeline, claiming it would help create jobs. Despite this, opposition to the project remains firm and has even spread to other parts of the pipeline, which extends across four states. My guest is Nick Tilson. He is the executive director of the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation and a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. Welcome to the program, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So you have been at the Cannonball protest site, which has been dubbed Sacred Stone Camp, I understand, since August, on and off. And there have been protests continuing. The sort of highest profile incidents that we heard about were when security guards deployed dogs against protesters. Several protesters were bit, and that captured a lot of attention. But since then, in Cannonball, how have the protests been going? Are they still ongoing on a daily basis?
Yeah, protests are now happening on a daily and sometimes every other day basis. And the protests have moved actually farther to the west to different construction sites outside of this 20-mile buffer zone next to the river. And so, you know, some of the protests have been as smaller groups as eight people, all the way up to huge groups, over 300 people protesting at the point of construction of the pipeline. Because I think after the Obama administration intervened and actually put a halt to the pipeline near the Missouri River, there was the myth that the construction had actually stopped, when really it just moved outside of this 20-mile buffer area. And actually, they're speeding up construction and have now moved to a 7-day work week.
So just to clarify then, construction near the Missouri River halted temporarily by the Obama administration. And in response, Energy Transfers, the company that is overseeing the pipeline, has continued its construction elsewhere and ramped it up. And I mentioned this is a very long pipeline, just a few miles shorter than what the Keystone XL pipeline would have been, and extends across four states. What form are the protests taking, Nick? We had seen protesters chaining themselves to equipment and the state then stepping in to slap felony charges on some of these activists, saying that the action of chaining oneself to construction equipment was endangering the police, who had to remove them. Are those acts of civil disobedience, people chaining themselves to equipment, construction equipment, are those forms still happening?
Yeah, I was actually one of the activists who a week and a half ago chained myself to a piece of equipment, and that was part of the first group of people that were actually charged with these felonies prior
to the
accident.
Been charged with a felony?
Yeah, I've been charged with a felony. And I was actually charged with four different charges that day. I was charged with criminal trespassing, objection or obstruction of a government function, disorderly conduct, and then the felony was what they reckless endangerment. And it was a total peaceful act of civil disobedience. At no time were the construction workers, the security company, the police officers, or myself, or the general public ever in danger at all. In fact, the police recorded the entire thing before they, you know, chased the media out of there. And it was a total act of civil disobedience. And we had no idea that they were going to charge us with felonies, because it was up until that time, nobody was charged with felonies. And so, you know, to us, we think that it's a way that they're trying to defuse this movement and use the legal system in what we believe an incorrect way to strike fear and try to prevent people from, you know, expressing their First Amendment rights.
And so people are despite the felony charges, people are continuing to take these risky actions?
People are continuing the actions. I think that one of the evolutions that we have seen is that we're actually moving to mass actions, where we're mobilizing, instead of small groups of 8 to 10 people doing actions at different sites, we're moving to this direction of doing mass actions, where on Sunday there was, you know, over 300 of us that participated in a mass action where we all just came to a site and used our bodies and used our prayers.
So let's talk about that action on Sunday, because it was reported in the local media. Here's a headline of one of the reports: security guard at Dakota Access Pipeline injured and then carried by protesters. And essentially it said, the article goes on to say that a guard was injured, assaulted by the protesters, a few of whom were armed with knives and at least one gun. And then this guard was then carried by protesters and eventually let go. I mean, this does not sound consistent with the kinds of protests that we've been hearing about coming from the Dakota Access Pipeline protesters.
Absolutely. That accusation is 100% wrong. I was actually there that day. I'm in part of the group of people who protested that day. That absolutely didn't happen. In fact, what happened that day was we came up on a county road, we parked on a county road, and then we actually marched on an access road that was about a quarter mile long with about 300 people to the actual site where there was construction. So by the time that we actually got to the construction site, all of the workers had packed up and left by the time that we actually got there, because they'd seen us walking for this quarter of a mile. And so we actually didn't have interaction with the security guards or interactions with the workers that day. So this false accusation, it's totally made up and it's totally propaganda. In fact, it was like almost opposite from that, because we marched up there and then the workers left. And then at that point, what we did was we actually, led by young people, we planted trees, willow trees, right in front of the path of the pipeline. And elders were singing and we said a prayer, and the workers had already gone. And so it was 100% peaceful. And it was actually really, really empowering and beautiful for all of us that were there, because we shut the site down. But we did something as simple as plant trees in front of the pipeline and say prayers and sing songs in our language.
Nick, the article basically cites these as facts coming from the Morton County Sheriff's Office, that the Sheriff's Office said that all but three security guards left, and then of these three security guards, one was assaulted. Pretty a strong claim to make, especially given that, as far as I understand it, weapons of any kind are banned from the protest sites, right, by the organizers themselves?
100%, yeah. Within the actual camp and all the protesters, guns are banned. So is drugs and alcohol are banned too, because it's a prayer camp. In the same way, when we do ceremonies, when we have our Sundance ceremonies, when we have our sacred ceremonies, we don't allow guns or drugs into there. And so that's actually one of the principal reasons why we don't actually have guns or drugs as part of the camp, is because we view this as a spiritual prayer camp that's founded in our indigenous cultures. And so our protest and our protest against this pipeline is acting upon our cultural and spiritual values that we have been, you know, holding on to for generations.
Now, Nick, the protests began in Cannonball, North Dakota, around the idea that this pipeline would run under the Missouri River and threaten the water that the Standing Rock Sioux tribe has relied on. However, as I mentioned, it's a lengthy pipeline. It sort of flew under the radar, I suppose, for a lot of activists until the Standing Rock Sioux began calling attention to it. But by then, a lot of pipeline has already been placed into the ground. Now, I understand protesters in other states are taking the example of what's been happening in North Dakota, and we're seeing some protests spread along other aspects and other parts of the pipeline. Can you tell us anything about that? I understand even in Iowa there have been some actions and even some arrests.
Absolutely, yeah. They've been, our brothers and sisters down there in Iowa have been taking a lot of leadership in helping stop the pipeline as it goes through their ranches and goes through their land and potentially could poison their lands and their water. And they've been taking, you know, all kinds of arrests have been made down there, from single mothers to grandmothers, standing up in a peaceful way to protest against this. And more, we're all starting to have solidarity with one another in stopping this pipeline. And there's, you know, actions that have taken place in South Dakota and in a few other places too.
So in the midst of all of this solidarity against the pipeline comes the AFL-CIO, shocking people by taking this official stand in support of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Now, I don't know if this is, you know, the AFL-CIO, of course, has traditionally thrown its weight behind the Democratic Party. The no DAPL protests have been kind of embarrassing, I think, for the Obama administration, which rejected the Keystone XL pipeline. Obama has been very sort of quiet about, has avoided talking about Dakota Access. And I'm wondering if the AFL's open stance in support of the pipeline is a way to give cover to the Democratic Party. But in general, what do you make of Richard Trumka's announcement that this pipeline essentially creates family-supporting jobs for union workers and therefore should be supported?
I think the AFL-CIO's endorsement in support of the pipeline, 100%, they're on the wrong side of the issue. In fact, if I was the AFL-CIO or members of the AFL-CIO, who they should actually be upset at is the Dakota Access Pipeline and Energy Transfer Partners, because they pursued a pipeline project in which they did not have all the easements and permits for, and it's irresponsible business. And so, you know, rather than coming out in support of a project that is, you know, violating people's human rights and hurting the environment, they should actually be putting their pressure on Energy Transfer Partners of why they have done a project in which they never received full all of their permits and all their easements before, putting the AFL-CIO and their members in a bad situation. Also, I think this brings up a lot of issues, because I think that the AFL-CIO has actually, you know, and I don't know if the members of the AFL-CIO know this, but have actually had a pretty terrible history with Indian country in general, and haven't been consistent with honoring tribal sovereignty on a lot of other projects. But for the AFL-CIO to come out on this issue, they really need to rescind their statement. And I think that you're starting to see members within the AFL-CIO who are not happy about the stance that the AFL-CIO has taken.
So let me actually read an excerpt from the statement that Richard Trumka put out. "We believe that community involvement in decisions about constructing and locating pipelines is important and necessary, particularly in sensitive situations like those involving places of significance to Native Americans. However, says the statement, once these processes have been completed, it is fundamentally unfair to hold union members' livelihoods and their families' financial security hostage to endless delay." So it sounds like the AFL-CIO simply saying, fine, you know, reroute the pipeline so that it avoids sacred burial grounds, and then get on with it and stop delaying these jobs that union members rely on. How do you respond?
Well, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, particularly what happened that day at the dogs too, was because the Dakota Access Pipeline, there was sacred sites that were identified. They weren't even doing construction at that site. After these sacred sites were identified, the Dakota Access Pipeline jumped ahead about 14 miles just to go to the site where the sacred sites were identified. And the company knew that these sacred sites were identified because the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe had filed them with the court, and so they were notified. So the next day, the company jumps ahead of their construction site 14 miles just to take the topsoil off where these sacred sites were as a strategy.
Wow.
And this is completely inconsistent with what the AFL CIO is saying. This is actually intentionally, this project intentionally was violating Indigenous people's rights, sacred sites, in destroying those things. And the second thing is that their statement isn't consistent with the Obama administration. I mean, the Obama administration actually did step up and worked with the Department of Justice, the Department of Interior and the Army to say, look, we're going to reassess how we involved tribal consultation in this process. And that's what they're doing right now. And that's what created the injunction for no construction under the Missouri River until this consultation issue is solved. So not only is there on the wrong side of the issue morally and otherwise, but their facts aren't correct, and their facts aren't even consistent with what's actually happening.
So then finally, let's talk about the Obama administration's position. He had been asked while he was on tour in Asia about the pipeline by, I believe it was a Laotian woman, and he made a lengthy statement about the kind of work that his administration has done in support of Native communities, but avoided specifically referring to Dakota Access Pipeline. Do you think that the Obama administration is sort of trying to figure out what to do next and maybe on the cusp of doing the right thing? What would you like to see from the Obama administration right now? Does it have the power to stop this pipeline in its tracks?
Absolutely. So I don't think that the Obama administration is 100% sitting on their hands, because they are doing interagency collaboration between the Department of Justice, the Department of Interior, and the Army to relook at how they've done this. And that's what's actually halted construction near the Missouri River. Our hope is that the Obama administration asks for a 100% full environmental impact study, and that they fully consult with the tribes. And our belief is that if a full environmental impact study is done and tribes are consulted in an effective, appropriate way, that there's no way that these permits can be given by the Army Corps of Engineers for the project. Furthermore, I think that this is a legacy issue for Obama, President Obama. President Obama has done a lot of things for Indian country and has done a lot of different things to stand up for Indian country. But at the same time, he does have the power to basically say, hey, I'm going to do an executive order, and I'm going to pull all permits for this project. And that's what our ask is to the Obama administration, is to work with the Army Corps, get these permits pulled, and stop the project. Because as the President of the United States, if he has a commitment to Indian country, we believe that that's something that he should do.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you as you continue your work with the protest. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Nick Tilson is the executive director of the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation and a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.